And now we move on to some more scientific naming of the ineffable. In 1869, a Russian scientist named Dmitry Mendeleev arranged the then 56 known elements by their atomic weight and valence onto a table. Like other maps, the periodic table has changed as previously unknown territories are charted, or in the case of plutonium in 1941, produced by human hands. Since then, more elements have been added to the list, and efforts to create and research new ones continue. Rob Dunn, biologist and writer at North Carolina State University, recently wrote in National Geographic about the element hunters. These are scientists pushing the frontiers of matter on their quest of discovery. Rob Dunn, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Virginia. Thanks for having me.
So when prepping for this interview, I was talking with my colleagues thinking that, well, I thought the periodic table was done. I mean, I guess a rather naive belief that we know all that we need to know. Give us a little summary of the process of adding discoveries to the periodic table. How are they even decided?
Well, so it's interesting. So your intuition is right that the periodic table, in terms of the elements that we find around us, is done. But in the 1940s, scientists started to try to make elements that don't currently exist by smashing other elements together. And part of that endeavor is just to sort of see what science can do, maybe a little bit like Dr. Frankenstein did with his monster. But the other interesting thing is that in the 1950s, it was predicted that maybe if you could make really, really heavy elements, that they might last a long time. And one of the things that defines the periodic table as we know it is that as you produce heavier and heavier elements, as you get up to toward 92, which is the end of the elements that we find outside, they get more and more fleeting. But this prediction suggested that maybe if you got really heavy elements, that they might last minutes or hours or days or maybe even thousands or millions of years. And if they did, it would actually change what we know about how every other element works, because it would mean that the insides of the elements are actually arranged in something like shells. And so what scientists wanted to do was to try to produce these really heavy elements, both to see if they could, in this sort of macho, hubris-laden scientific quest, but also to see if our understanding of the entire universe and the stuff out of which everything we love or hate is made is true. And so it was this really basic quest that's taken a long, long time and involves relatively few people. So it's a really fascinating story to me.
Well, one of the ways that you draw us into this process is through one of these few people, a very driven, very interesting scientist named Yuri Oganessian is what I'm guessing you pronounce his name. He's working out of a lab in Dubna. This is a city north of Moscow. So how is he going about creating these new heavy elements, as you put it?
Yeah, so he started in on the story in around 1978. And he was actually trained as an architect, and it's not quite clear to me how he enters nuclear physics from architecture, but some parts of his story are a bit mysterious. But in 1978, he figured out what might be a new way to make heavier and heavier elements, which was to take something like plutonium and to sling a sort of medium-weight element like calcium at it. And so he imagined that if you could do this, you could make really heavy things, and you might make something as heavy as 114. And if you could do that, you could test this theory. And 114 came to be described as being on this island of stability. And when Oganessian talks about this, he talks about it in this metaphorical landscape, and like he's a captain sailing off to this island. And if he gets there, you know, it will feel like land. And so in 1978, he starts on this. And his first real headway is in some ways in 1998. And so all these years later, when he finally has everything together to try to produce 114, and he slams these atoms together at trillions of miles an hour. And when he does, he produces a single atom of 114. And as he does, the question becomes, how long does it last? Does it last longer than 113? And if it does, to him, that will mean that everything we thought about all of the elements was wrong, and in fact, the centers of the elements or the atoms are arranged in these sort of predictable ways. And in fact, 114 does last longer. And so he suddenly thinks he's arrived on this island of stability, and then he goes on to produce multiple versions of 114 and 113, 115, 116, 117, and 118, and explore this whole landscape. And so he's just this one guy, you know, in his lab that's sort of off on his own exploring this, in a way, theoretical landscape. And it's all their lab really focuses on, and they've done it through the hardest years of in recent Russian history. You know, they do it in this teeny town, and Oganesian could not be a more pleasant, affable guy. And so it's really an amazing situation.
And because you are writing for National Geographic, there are these fantastic photographs of the lab. It makes it look like this Cold War era, you know, frozen in time industrial lab in Dubna. Who's funding this work, by the way?
So it's interesting. So originally, all this work was very contentious. That, you know, the Russians fought with the Americans for who was first, and the Germans fought with the Russians. But now these endeavors are so difficult that they're actually really international collaborations. And so the lab in Dubna is partially funded by the U.S., partially funded by Eastern Europeans, partially funded by Germans, and then also funded by Russians. And so what was once this really heated scientific endeavor is now something that could only happen with international collaboration. But it does look like a Cold War facility in many ways. Oganesian's fond of, so I originally described the cyclotron that they used to slam these atoms together as being built in 1968. Mm-hmm. And he said that a cyclotron is like a Russian woman. You should never mention her age. it's a 1968 piece of equipment that they're doing the most sophisticated science in the world on, because they're gluing new things on the end, and some pieces are brand new, but the core is very old. So it's a pretty amazing thing.
Well, Rob, we're going to run out of time in just a minute, so I want to ask you, what happens? I mean, after you create something like he's replicated a few times, this 114, 120, 126, what then happens? Does it have to go through a sort of jurying process to be named onto the periodic table?
Yeah, so there's a many-year jurying process, and so 114 and 116 have both been through that process, and 114 ended up being named for Oganesian's advisor, Flerov, who's the one who first told Stalin that the Americans were trying to make a bomb. Mm. And 116 comes to be named for Lawrence Livermore Lab, Livermorium. And now we wait for the other new elements that they've found but have not yet been officially accepted. So there will be more.
Well, Rob Dunn, biologist and writer at the Department of Biology at North Carolina State University, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Virginia. Real pleasure.
Rob's article is called The Element Hunters. It's in National Geographic, and you'll find a link to go through it at wordofmouthradio.org. You can also, of course, follow us on Facebook and on Twitter.